Vastly Blank stepped down from the boulder and then sat to adjust the leather bindings protecting his shins. Fiddler frowned down at the heavy and then across at Baron Gruck. The sergeant shrugged.
Just our luck, Captain, that it's him got the best eyes here.
Soldier, said Fiddler. Vastly Blank looked up, smiled.
Captain wants to know what you saw from up there, Baron Gruck said. We're surrounded,
he began pulling at a torn toenail. Fiddler made a fist, raised it for a moment, and then let his hand fall to his side again. How many? Vastly Blank looked back up, smiled.
Maybe 3,000.
He brought up most of the nail, which he'd prized off, and squinted at it, wiping the blood away.
And? Banded leather, Captain. Some splint. Not much chain. Round shields and spears. Javelins, curved swords. Some archers.
He wiped more blood from the nail, but it was still mottled brown.
They're getting ready to attack? Not yet, Vastly Blank replied. I smell their sweat.
You what?
Long march. Best nose, too,
Baron Gruck offered. Vastly Blank popped the nail into his mouth, made sucking sounds. Sighing, Fiddler moved away. The sky to the east was lightening, almost colourless, with streaks of silver and pewter close to the horizon. The sound of the Kalansi soldiers was a soft clatter coming at them from all sides. The enemy taking position, readying shields and weapons. Ranks of archers were forming up, facing the hill. Sergeant Erb heard Commander Hedge talking to his own dozen or so archers, but couldn't quite make out what he was saying. Shifting his heavy shield, he edged closer to where Helion sat. He couldn't keep his eyes from her.
She is so beautiful now, so pure and clean, and the awful truth is, I liked her better when she looked like a bird that's flown into a wall. At least then I had a chance with her. A drunk woman will take anyone after all, so long as they clean up after them and take care of them and got the coin for more to drink. Take cover, they're drawing.
He worked his way back under his shield. He heard Fiddler.
Hedge! After the first salvo!
Distant thrums, hollow whistling, and suddenly arrows thudded the ground and snapped and skidded on rock. One pained howl and a chorus of curses. Erb looked across at her to see if she was all right. Two arrows were stuck in her shield, and there was a lovely startled look on her face.
I love you,
Erb shouted. She stared at him.
What?
At that moment a thick rushing sound filled the air. He saw her flinch back down, but these weren't arrows. He angled himself up, saw a band of enemy archers on the ground, writhing and pelting back towards the barrow, one of Hedge's bridge burners, his shoulders covered in turf, his uniform grey and brown with dirt.
Dug a hole, did he? Hit the archers with some god's awful grenado.
Hedge shouted,
Archers down! Gods below!
Someone bellowed.
What was that blue stuff? They're rotting to bones!
Looking over, Erb saw the accuracy of that assessment. Whatever had splashed all over the archers had dissolved their flesh. Even the bones and quivers filled with arrows were nothing but paste. Now an officer was stepping out from the ring of Kalansi infantry, tall, white-skinned. Corporal Clasp crawled up beside him.
That's one of those fuckeralls, isn't it?
You!
Shouted Helion, pointing a finger at Erb.
What did you say?
The Forkerel Asael then roared, impossibly loud, the sound hammering against the hillside. Erb was driven into the ground by the concussion. He clawed at his ears, a second roar, and then it seemed to dim, as if muffled. A quavering voice lifted from a nearby trench.
Worm says fuck you, Asael!
Is that you I'm smelling again, Wid?
Erb uncurled, straightened up, though still on his knees. He could see the Forkerel Asael, watched him roaring for a third time, but the sound barely reached through. A rock sailed out, landed well short of the pier, bounced and rolled. The enemy commander seemed to flinch from it nevertheless, and then he whirled.
Here they come!
Hellion's voice was much closer and much louder.
What did you say?
He twisted round. Corporal Clasp was lying between them, staring back and forth.
What in Hood's name is with you two?
I love you, Herb shouted.
When he saw her delighted grin, Herb clambered over a grunting Clasp. Hellion pitched up to meet him, her mouth hard against his own. Pinned by Herb's weight, Clasp squirmed and kicked.
You idiots! The enemy's advancing! Get off me!
Cuttle watched the lines closing in. At 20 or so paces, javelins flashed out, colliding against uplifted shields, and then, at a signal from the company commanders, the Colanci surged forward into a charge against the slope. The sapper half rose from his position, the crossbow thocked, thick cord humming, the vibration a soft brush against his cheek. He saw his quarrel take a squad leader in the throat. The rest of the Marines had also loosed quarrels into the rushing enemy. Bodies went tumbling among the crags and outcrops. The sapper set his weapon down behind him, swung his shield round, slipping his arm through the straps, and drew his short sword. These four motions were done before the squad leader hit the ground.
Hold and at 'em!
He shouted, rising as the first Colanci arrived. An arrow had pinned Saltlick's left foot to the ground, but he didn't want to move anyway. The soldier arriving directly in front of him stumbled at the last moment. Saltlick pressed his shield down on the man and drove the pommel of his sword through the top of his helm and then the bones of his skull. When he pulled his weapon free, the helm was stuck to the pommel. A spear thrust at him. He batted it aside with the helm, put his shoulder behind his shield bash and flattened the soldier's face. As the man reeled back, Saltlick stabbed him low in the gut, dragged the weapon free and began hacking at another Colanci. They seemed to be everywhere. He never even saw the spear that impaled his neck and tore out his throat. Koryk swore, swinging his left arm to shake off the remnants of his broken shield. He drew a Seti long knife from his harness, kicked away the man whose skull had broken his shield, and looked up in time to meet the next attacker. Blades flashed out, the heavier one batting aside the jabbing spear, the thinner one thrusting through leather armor to sink a hand's width into the Colanci's chest, and then back out again. As the soldier staggered back, sagging, Koryk brought his longsword down between head and neck, the blow of such power that he cut through a clavicle and down through three ribs, where they met the breastbone. Koryk twisted to avoid another spear point, then heard a laugh and saw Smiles spin away again, leaving behind her a toppling corpse. Another surging mass of Colanci rushed up towards them. The blued, leathery blade seemed to shout as it clove through the side of a helm, crushing the cheek guard and then the bones it was meant to protect. Blood spat out from the soldier's gaping mouth, the eyes bulging, and then Korab kicked the man away, watched as he pitched backward to collide with the next soldier. The echo of that shout raced back and forth in his skull. He bellowed in answer to it, lifted the weapon crossways over his shield, and awaited the next fool.
I am a Marine, a heroic soldier on a day of glory. Come to me and die.
Swearing, Throat Slitter cut off an arm to his right, then another to his left. Blood sprayed him from both sides, making him curse some more. He shifted to avoid a spear thrust, kicked under a jaw hard enough to snap the head back, and then slashed across that exposed neck. Beside him, Dead Smell staggered to repeated blows on his shield from a Colanci wielding a heavy spiked axe. Throat Slitter's sideways thrust drove his long knife over the attacker's shoulder, into the gap behind the corner of the jaw and the flared helm, angling slightly upwards to slice through the spinal cord just below the base of the skull. Righting himself, Dead Smell lunged with his shield, blocking an attacker trying to take Throat Slitter from the flank. The enemy soldier grunted at the impact, knees buckling. Having broken his own weapon, Dead Smell now held the spiked axe, and he hammered it down, splitting the Colanci's round shield, and then thrusting the spike into the man's shoulder. Ducking low, Throat Slitter cut through the Achilles tendon of the Colanci's right leg, and as the screaming man fell, he stabbed down through the eye socket, silencing the cries.
"Stay down!"
shouted Widdershins behind him. A quarrel hissed over throat's litter, caught the next foe in the chest. From Dead Smell's other side, Balm shouted,
"Where'd you get that stupid axe, soldier? Find a sword! You end up hanging out there and you're finished!" "I'm looking, damn you! I'm looking!"
Kisware fell onto her back. She heard the blocked thrust above her, and then Cinta's snarl as her sister backslashed across the Kalansi's face. Kicking herself clear of his collapsing body, her hand closed on a javelin. She grasped it, pushed herself back onto her feet, and leapt into the press yet again. Cinta was taking blows on her shield, righting herself from that sideways lunge against Kisware's assailant. Badan Gruk then flung himself at her attacker, pushing his short sword deep into the man's side. An axe came down on the back of the sergeant's helm, splitting it, driving Badan Gruk face first into the ground. The half-moon blade sobbed free, its edge dragging free hair, scalp, and fragments of bone. Howling, Cinta cut off the hand holding it, and then the flailing arm, and then opened wide the man's belly with a single savage slash. Intestines tumbled out over Badan Gruk's corpse, and still she howled. A spear transfixed Laptwirl, drove him against a tilted standing stone. The Falari cutter shrieked as the iron point bit through to grind against the rock. He chopped down with his short sword, slicing off the fingers of the nearer hand along the spear's shaft. The pressure from the weapon released all at once. He slid forward on the slick wood until he was close to the Kalansi and slashed halfway through the woman's neck, severing the jugular. As the woman fell, the cutter dropped sword and shield, grasped hold of the butt end of the spear. Feeling the point dig at an angle into the ground at the base of the stone behind him, he flung out his feet and fell straight down. The shaft snapped just past his back. Leaving it there, he gained his knees, wiping his hands on dead grasses, and took up shield and sword again. Spitting out a mouthful of blood from a cut tongue, he gasped,
"Now that wasn't so bad!"
More Kalansi clambered into view between the outcrops. Laptwirl went forward to meet them, stepping over Burnt Rope's body. He had enough left in him to take a few more down. Maybe. Skulldeath sailed sideways through the air, gliding over the hunched back of a Kalansi engaged in a fierce battle with Relico. Lashing down, his blade bit deep beneath the flared rim of the man's helm, cutting through his vertebrae. Spinning round, Skulldeath landed in a crouch and then screamed as he lunged forward. He saw a face staring directly ahead, and the Kalansi ducked down behind his round shield, slashing out with his scimitar. But Skulldeath leapt high, one hand landing atop the enemy's helm, and used that to pivot round above him. Cutting downward, he sliced through the Kalansi's hamstrings. Striking the ground, the Desert Prince rolled. He heard Cinta shouting, heard Kisware's cursing. Gaining his feet, Skulldeath found himself surrounded. He twisted, slashed, ducked, kicked and closed. Bodies fell away, blood sprayed. Then a blow hammered his lower back, lifting him from his feet. He tried curling away from the blow, but something was jammed in his body, a hard edge crunching and grinding against his spine. He was driven to the ground face first, and then they were beating on him, heavy edges chopping into his muscles and bones. One struck the back of his head, and there was darkness and then oblivion. Hedge stood over the corpse of Bevedikt. The damned fool had been killed outright by that first shower of arrows, taking one through an eye. From his vantage point, Hedge could see the ring of defenders contracting as the enemy pushed higher up the slope. He watched Fiddler moving down to block an imminent breach where most of a squad had gone down.
"You, archers, keep an eye on there. If they get through, it's a straight path to the crippled god."
"Yes, sir."
"Now, the rest of you, we got to relieve the pressure. Take those coppery ones and throw for the 5th and 6th ranks. Use them all up. If we don't make them reel right now, we're done for."
"What's the copper kittens do, sir?"
Hedge shook his head.
"I forget, and the alchemist's dead. Just go. Spread out. Get moving."
As they left, the sapper took up his crossbow. He only had half a dozen quarrels left. The occasional arrow still sailed down here and there, but either the sappers he'd dug in below the slope were all dead, or they'd used up their munitions. It'd be just his luck if some errant arrow took him or Fiddler out now. Loading his weapon, he moved down past his four remaining archers, who were sending arrows into the breach. He could see Fiddler there with those Dalhanese sisters and a lone heavy infantryman shorter than any of them. The Kalansi, who'd been advancing to flank them, were all down, feathered with arrows.
"Good work!" barked out Hedge to his archers. "Now find somewhere else you're needed!"
A stone turned underfoot and Fiddler's left ankle gave way in a stab of pain. Cursing, he stumbled, looked up to see a Kalansi closing, the eyes manic and wild beneath the helm, a heavy axe lifting high. The quarrel punched the man back a step, and he looked down in astonishment at the heavy bolt buried in his chest. One hand closed on Fiddler's collar, dragged him clear. An all-metal crossbow landed in his lap, followed by a quiver.
"Load up, Fid," said Hedge, drawing his short sword. "Keep 'em off my left flank, will you?"
"You getting mad, Hedge?"
"Aye.
Gods help them."
His attacker had pushed his spear right through Bottle's right thigh, pinning him down, but Bottle had replied with a sword through the stomach, and as the Kalansi sagged back, voicing terrible screams, the Marine decided he'd come away the winner of the argument.
"Is that what this is? An argument? But look at them. They're slaves. They're not asking for this."
Tar dropped down beside him, blood streaming from a gash in his face.
"You want that spear out, Bottle? It ain't bleeding much for the moment, but if I take it out..."
"I know," Bottle said,
"but it's pushed right through. I want it gone, Sergeant. I'll stuff rags in."
"A bleeder?"
"It ain't one, Sergeant. It's just a big fucking hole."
Tar pushed Bottle onto his side and then quickly drew out the spear.
"Bleeding," he said after a moment, "but not spurting. When I see dead smell, I'll send him your way."
Nodding, feeling faint, Bottle pushed himself upright, fumbling at the pouch at his side, where he found a roll of bandages. He was working a wad into one end of the hole when there was a flash of heat from downslope and then blood-chilling screams. Brother Grave stared in shock, furious at his own helplessness, as copper-hued grenadoes sailed down from the defenders to strike the Kalansi ranks at the foot of the barrow and on the level ground beyond it. The emerald fires that erupted when they shattered seemed almost demonic as they spread with terrible ferocity through the ranks. The attack was a shambles. He saw his soldiers reeling, flinching back.
"This is going to take longer than I anticipated."
He looked to the northeast, seeking that telltale sign of dust on the horizon.
"Where are they? Hagraf, sound the recall. We shall wait until the fires burn down, then strike again and again until they are all dead."
The stench of burnt flesh carried with it a strange flavor, something between sulfur and limes. The crippled god listened to the clamor of battle on all sides. He heard the cries of pain and anger, but these were sounds he had expected. Amidst the clash of iron and the splinter of wooden shields, amidst the whistle of arrows, some of them striking close, and the splinter of shafts against insensate stone, he heard soldiers shouting to each other, heard their desperate breaths as they struggled to stay alive and to kill those who rose up against them in seemingly endless waves. And overhead, the sky was almost blinding with all the souls abandoned by his descent to this world. He thought to hear them as well, but they were too far away, lost in the heavens. Did they still struggle to hold on to their faith, with their god vanished for so long? Or had they surrendered to the cruel malice that came to so many of the spiritually vacant? Did they now wander without purpose in the horror of a meaningless existence? Fires erupted around him, not so close that he could feel their heat, and now shrieks rushed out to fill the air. Sounds of dying from all sides. He had heard these sounds before. There was nothing new, nothing to give him comprehension.
that mortal lives could so willingly extinguish themselves in the name of causes and noble desires. Was this not the most profound, most baffling sacrifice of all? The one sacrifice every god has long since forgotten. The one sacrifice that they, in their callous indifference, could not even comprehend.
Their flesh is all they know. All these men and women here. Flesh as now clothes me. Feel our limits, our terrible limits. So frail, so temporary. A flitting light, a moment's breath. I hear you surrendering it, this one gift that is the only gift ever given you. You yield it back into the firmament, and the world passes on, barely taking notice. Will no one notice? I will heed your deaths. I will remember.
The crippled god listened, past the horns of retreat, past the cries for healers, past the clashing signals announcing the next wave to advance upon these beleaguered few. The crippled god listened, and he waited. Seven of the dead fires, the Tlanimas stood on a bare rise to the east of the Malazan regulars. Nomkala and Kaltur Manal were now among them, as bound as true kin. And in Nomkala's mind, it was well. She did not feel like a stranger. She did not feel alone. Uragal the Woven spoke.
She prepares for the enemy's approach. We have listened to her silence, and we know that there are no lies within her soul. Yet she is mortal.
Many who see her, said Baruch, believe her weak, not in her will, but in her flesh and bones. She has yielded her sword. I sought to give her mine, but she refused me.
We understand the power of a formidable will, observed Kalb the Silent Hunter.
Nevertheless, said Baruch.
Uragal said,
I have elected that we remain with her, to stand here rather than join the fate of the Marines. Should the crippled god indeed rise once more, we shall not even witness that moment.
He faced the others.
You did not agree with me on this, my command that we remain with her.
It is what we may lose, Uruguel, said Senec the Shattered, to see him reborn.
Must our faith show its face to us, Senec?
I have longed for proof, the Shattered replied, that all that we have done has purpose. Is this not what the Fallen One offered us? Yet we do not lend our swords to the defense of our god.
In the manner I have chosen, countered Uragal, we will do just that.
Nomkala spoke hesitantly.
Kin, I have listened to the soldiers, these Malazans, at the campfires in the times of rest.
They had turned to regard her now.
They speak to each other rarely, yet when they do, it is of her words from long ago, when she spoke of being unwitnessed. They do not, I feel, quite understand her, nor do I. And yet, when I hear them, when I see what stirs in their eyes, the word awakens something in them. Perhaps it is no more than defiance. But then, is not defiance mortality's most powerful proclamation?
There was silence for a time, barring the faint moan of the morning wind. Finally, Baruch said,
Unwitnessed. Then let us make this our cause, too.
One none of us understands? Demanded Senec.
Yes, one none of us understands.
Very well. Nomkala, your words awaken in me defiance.
Senec turned to Uragal.
We have been ghosts among them. We have given them so little because we had so little to give.
This day, let us give to her all that we have left.
The fallen one, said Baroque, has placed his trust in her, his faith. Uragal, I honor you. My kin, I honor you all.
The Tlani Mas paused and then said,
One must be sacrificed. The interference of Akrast Corvalain remains and will do so until the last of the Fokral Asael falls. But the sundering of the vow by one of us here will grant us what we seek. I volunteer to be that sacrifice.
Soft voice, said Uragal.
You are most formidable in battle. One of lesser use should be the one to sunder the vow. It shall be me.
You are both incorrect, said Senec. I am well named the Shattered. There must be no sentimentality to this decision, nor obstinate courage. After all, does any of us here not possess that? Baroque, Urogal, Kalb and Halad, Nomkala of the Wise Words, Kalt Urmanal of Trell Blood, I shall open the way for you all, in the name of defiance. The discussion ends.
The Tlani Mas were silent, and in silence they fell to dust. The enemy had been sighted. The enemy was closing. Lostare Yil stood with the adjunct in Tavare's tent, watching as the woman prepared for battle. The adjunct had selected a standard-issue longsword from the depleted stores. Its last wielder had scorched uneven patterns down the length of the leather-backed wooden scabbard. An eye bereft of talent, but possessed of boundless discipline and patience. Not an artist, a soldier. The captain had inquired of Tavare about her selection of this particular weapon. Was it the scabbard's elaborate pattern that caught her interest? The well-honed blade edges? The solid-looking cross-hilt and firm grip? And had earned nothing more than a blank look in reply. And Lostara understood, when Tavare had a moment later glanced back at the scabbard, that the adjunct had not even noticed any of these details. Her coat of chain waited on the wooden chest that had held it, with the leather-cuffed gauntlets folded over the glistening iron links. The plain shirt Tavare was now wearing was worn through in places, revealing pale, almost bloodless skin and the ripples of bone so close beneath it. Her iron helm with its grilled cheek guards sat waiting on the map table. Tavare finished binding her bootlaces and then walked to stand before a small wooden box beside the helm, one that bore a silver-inlaid family crest of House Paran. The fingertips of her right hand settled upon the lid, and then the adjunct closed her eyes for a moment. Lostara suddenly felt an intruder on this, Tavare's private readying for what was to come, and almost turned to leave before recalling that the adjunct had ordered her to attend her preparations, to help with the chain coat and its fastenings. The lid creaked as Tavare opened it, startling Lostara. Reaching inside, she drew out a necklace, a simple leather string, and an eagle's talon of brass or gold. Then she turned to the captain. Would you tie this for me, please? But Lostara simply stared at the talon. Captain? She looked up, met Tavare's eyes. The adjunct sighed. I am a child of the Emperor. What more is there for you to understand, Lostara Yil?
Nothing, adjunct.
She moved forward, took the necklace in her hands. As she stepped close, drawing it up round Tavare's neck, Lostara caught a faint scent of perfume from the woman's thin, straight hair, and her knees came close to buckling, a rush of ineffable sorrow taking hold of her.
Captain? A moment. Sorry, sir.
She struggled to tie the knot, but it was harder than it should have been, as her vision wasn't clear.
Done.
Thank you, Tavare replied. Now the chain.
Of course.
Banaskar stood holding the reins of the adjunct's horse, a Kundril breed, tough and stubborn. But it was gaunt, aged by suffering, its coat matted and dull. Even the burned tears had in the last days on the desert failed in their diligence. This beast had no running left in it. The damned thing might well collapse beneath Tavare as she rode out to address her army.
Address her army? Is this truly the adjunct? When did she last speak to all of her soldiers? Now I remember. On the ships, confusing words, the awakening of an idea few could even grasp. Will she manage better this time?
He realized that he was nervous for her. No, he was sick with anxiety.
So I stand here holding the reins of her horse outside her tent. I am... God, the word is pathetic. But what does it matter? I am also priest to a god about to die on him. I once vowed that I would meet this day cold sober. What a miserable vow to make.
The tent flap was drawn back and Captain Lostari Yil stepped outside, looked round until she saw Banaskar and then gestured. He led the beast forward by the reins. The adjunct stepped into view, met his eyes and nodded.
Demidrek, you have stood here for some time, I should think. I was expecting one of my aides to attend to this, and they're used to standing around and waiting. My apologies.
He blinked.
Adjunct, you misunderstand. I drove the poor man away.
He handed her the reins.
I am and always will be honored, Tavare Paran.
If I could, she said, I would order you away from here.
But I am not one of your soldiers to be bullied around, he said, smiling. So I will do as I damned well please, adjunct.
She studied him and then said, I wonder.
Adjunct?
Is this not the true purpose of a priest? To take faith from the one hand and place it into the next? To stand between a god and one such as myself?
His breath caught.
A few remain, he managed. Most go through the motions, but see themselves as privileged from both sides. Closer to their god than to their unordained flock.
But that is not you, is it?
Adjunct, I am kneeling beside you.
There was the flicker of something in her eyes, something raw, swiftly suppressed, and then she was setting a boot in the stirrup and drawing herself into the saddle. Banaskar stepped back. Looking away, he saw rank upon rank of soldiers turned, facing them, and now they slowly shifted as Tavare trotted her mount forward. She reached the southwest corner of the formation before wheeling inward to pass along the back line. She rode straight in her saddle, a figure in tattered chain upon a starved, dying horse. The image seemed to sear itself in Banaskar's mind. Reaching the far end, she swung round the corner, making her way up to face the front of the three much-reduced legions. She would speak to her soldiers now, and, much as he yearned to hear her words, he knew that they were not for him. Chest aching, the priest turned away. As she rode towards the head of her forces, Tavare could see the dust cloud from the approaching army, and it was vast. Wheeling her horse, she walked the animal on a course parallel to the presented ranks, slowing the beast's steps enough to move her gaze from one face to the next in the front line. When the adjunct finally spoke, her voice carried firm on the wind.
Does anyone know you? You, who stood in the shadows of the heavies and the marines? Who are you? What is your tale? So many have seen you marching past, seen you standing silent and unknown. Even now, your faces are almost lost beneath the rims of your helms.
She was silent for a long moment, her eyes tracking each and every visage. And then she halted, gaze fixing upon one man, a Falari.
Corporal Grid Fan, 3rd Squad, 11th Company, Bone Hunter. You carried Sample, the soldier on your left, on your back, the last day in the desert. And before the blood for water, the only thing that kept you and her alive was your love for her.
The man seemed to sway before her words. She nudged her horse forward.
Where stands Rekai?
Here!
Cried out a voice from a dozen ranks back. When Lostari Yil lost consciousness protecting my life on the day of the Naruk, you led your squad to recover us. Myself, Henar Vygolf, Captain Yil. You lost a brother, and to this day you can find no tears for him. But be at ease. There are those in your squad who have wept in your stead. At night, when you sleep. She walked her horse forward a few more steps, found another face. Sergeant Ordinary Grey. When Sergeant Gauntai's squad of marines broke and tried to murder him, you and Kud Howl held them all off. You cut them down to save Gauntai. Because once, long ago, on the holy desert of Raraku, he showed kindness to you. She reached the end of the ranks, turned her mount round and began retracing her route. Who are you? I know who you are. What have you done? You have stayed with me since the very beginning. Soldiers, hear me. This day is already lost to history, and all that happens here shall remain forever unknown. On this day, you are unwitnessed, except for the soldier to either side of you. They shall witness. And I tell you this, those soldiers to either side of you, they are all that matters. The historian scrolls have no time for soldiers like you. I know, for I have read hundreds of them. They yield a handful of words to speak of defeat or victory. Perhaps, if so warranted, they will make mention of great valor, extraordinary courage. But the weight of those words is no more and no less than those used to speak of slaughter and murder. Because, as we all know, one soldier can be hero and villain both. We have no place in their histories. So few do. They are not us. They were never us. And we shall never be them. You are the unwitnessed. But I have seen what you see. I have felt what you feel. And I am as much a stranger to history as any of you. The adjunct reined in again at the very center and swung her horse round to face the silent troops. On the day of the Naruk, they stood for you. Today, here, you shall stand for them, and I shall stand with you, my beloved soldiers. She held up a gauntleted hand. Say nothing. We are walls of silence, you and me. We are perfect reflections of the one we face. And we have faced each other for so long now. And the meaning of that silence is none of the enemy's business. Behind her, she could feel the tramp of thousands of boots reverberating up from the ground. But she would not turn, would not face the enemy. Her eyes belonged only to her soldiers. And, she could see, theirs belonged in turn to her and her alone. Bone hunters! Yield only in death on this day. When she rode to take her position on the south flank, Fist Blistig watched her, his eyes following her as did the gazes of every soldier round him.
Gods below, what kind of rousing speech was that? Salvage it, Fist, before it's too late.
He swung round.
Forward ranks, drop!
But he got no further. Weapons snapped out of sheaths and scabbards, shields lifting onto shoulders, and in the faces around him he saw the coldest iron he had ever seen. Sister Freedom surveyed the enemy position. They had done the best they could, given the limits of the land. Arrayed along a modest ridge, and before them the ground stretched more or less level, although just to the north rose a series of low hills. Her scouts had informed her that the land beyond those hills was cut by ravines. If not for that obstacle to ordered retreat, no doubt the enemy commander would have positioned his or her troops on those heights. But movement would have been too restricted, and in a battle that could prove deadly. She saw no heavily armored infantry among the foreign soldiers facing them, and no cavalry. The ranks of archers anchoring each flank looked pitifully small.
This is barely an army, ventured Brother Aloft, who rode at her side. I might well believe that they crossed the glass desert. See how disordered and worn they are, how few in number. They must have left a road of corpses behind them.
Of that I have no doubt, Freedom replied, eyes narrowing upon seeing a lone rider, a slight, frail-looking figure out in front of the facing line of soldiers. Yet, she added, crossing that desert should have been impossible.
The foes who destroyed our kin at the Great Spire were known to Brother Diligence, Volcando, Lesseri. I do not recognize those standards.
Nor I, Brother Aloft. From what land have they come, I wonder?
She looked round, baffled.
To this place, to die.
Brother Grave draws close to the smaller force. She nodded. Though faint, his sending had reached through to her. Akrust Corvalane was in a tumult, disturbed and thinning with weakness.
There is something still to come. I feel its assault.
She looked up at the sky, but saw only those slashes of jade, icy worlds flung across the heavens. They had last appeared on the day the foreign god was brought down.
And that is the truth of this, all of this. They seek to return him to the heavens. But the fate of the fallen god belongs to the gods, not to humans. We could have wrested that privilege away from those gods with our ancient power, our elder Warren, but that has been taken from us for the moment. Whose game was this?
She wondered, eyes still on that frail commander, who was clearly addressing his or her troops.
Her? That is a woman.
Sister? She shook her head.
Audacity rarely goes unpunished.
She reined in.
The way to the south is open. Brother, I want you there. I no longer trust that we shall have the power to make these foreigners yield.
But why?
We shall strike them, yes, but not seeking to enslave. Voice no words in your cries, brother. Instead, flense the flesh from their bones. I trust nothing more subtle.
As you wish.
Lead your forces round to the south, to encircle. The ranks we see are no doubt screening reserves, and I would know their strength. I, in turn, will leave the center to high-watered Melest, and take the north, where I will lead the dead king's elite infantry into the crook between the enemy's flank and the hills.
There is great risk in that, Sister Freedom.
No one hides behind those hills, brother. Furthermore, with me in the lead, we can drive that flank inward, shatter the hinge on your side while I break the one on mine, and we shall make quick work of this.
Aloft faced the north. Do you sense anything from high-watered Keskan? Have they encountered the other army? Brother Grave cannot find them at all.
Nor can I. If they are in battle, then we must trust that they can delay or even drive back the enemy.
The woman commanding the foreigners was now riding to take position on the south flank. Whatever she had said to her soldiers had elicited no cheers, no defiant roars.
She has lost them, cried Brother Aloft.
So it seems, brother. See where she goes? She understands the weakness of that side. Ride straight for her when you advance. Kill her.
She might well be alone by then. I believe this army is moments from routing.
Such is the failing of their kind, Freedom replied. Humans have the qualities of vermin. You will find them everywhere, but they share a belief in the virtue of running away when threatened. We shall have to hunt them down, brother, and rid us of them once and for all.
I will ride to my vanguard now, sister. When next we meet, it shall be standing upon the corpses of these wretched upstarts.
The ground will welcome their bones, she replied, nodding.
War-leader Gaul surveyed his paltry force of horse warriors, and then, helm tucked under one arm, he walked over to Hanavad. The foundling Rut was beside her, the unnamed baby cradled in his arms. His thin face was white with fear.
"Wife," said Gaul in greeting.
"Husband."
"I will die today."
"I know," she replied.
"Will you flee this battle for our child?"
"No," she said.
"Please, I beg you."
"Husband, we have nowhere to go. We shall find you in the ancestral hills, beneath a warm sun, and the desert flowers will fill our eyes with the colors of spring."
At the ancient parting words of the Kundril, Gaul slowly closed his eyes.
"I have fallen," he said,
looking up once more to meet her level gaze.
"You have seen my weakness."
"I have only seen what can be found in all of us, beloved. Does not a war leader of the Kundril walk the same ground as the rest of us? Your gift was courage and cunning on the field of battle. That gift remains. Take it with you this day, in the name of Coltane, and in the spirit of the Wiccans, who were the greatest horse warriors this world has ever seen. Did we not proclaim that? With your own words, did you not cry their name to the heavens, until even the ancestral hills stirred in the awakening of our ghosts?"
"I did, my love."
"We burned tears upon our faces to mark their passing from the world. But I see Kundril warriors behind you, husband. I see the best of what remains. Lead them. I give to you the courage of my own heart to join with yours. Today, I am proud."
Trembling, he stepped forward and took her in his arms. Fist Faradan's sort watched the massive army form up on the plain beyond. By numbers alone, the center dominated. Medium infantry, along with skirmishers and crescents of archers, she judged 7,000 or 8,000. The wings belonged to heavy infantry, and she could see a pure-blooded Forkral Asael commanding each one. Her eyes narrowed on the pure opposite her, a female, mounted on a bone-white horse, from which she was now dismounting.
"They have power in their voice," Faradan Sort shouted. "By command alone, they will seek to make you yield, to drop your weapons. Defy them, Malazans!" "Easy enough to say. Probably impossible to achieve. This could turn into horror very quickly."
She drew her sword. Ancient scars from the sorcery of the Storm Riders marred the blade, forming a crazed mottling of pattern welding and watermarking. In her mind, a faint echo rose up, the crash of massive waves shuddering the treacherous icy stone underfoot, the bitter cold bite of the shackles round her bandaged ankles. Explosions of foam, and then, rising through the blue-white foment, a shape, a figure armored in ice. She shook herself, mouth suddenly dry.
"It's a warm day. Nothing to slip on. No numbness to steal all feeling from my hands. No raw patches where my skin has torn away at the touch of metal. I have faced worse. Remember that. It's what has kept you going battle after battle."
The Forkral Asael was walking ahead of her troops now, up towards a low rise. Faradan Sort suddenly looked down, studied the yellow, brittle grasses, the countless rodent holes.
"Soldiers, anyone see any scorpions hereabouts?"
A chorus of grunts answered her, all in the negative.
"Good. That will do then. Shields high. Seems she's got something to say to us." "Gods. This is where it gets unfair."
Smiling, Sister Freedom studied the enemy forces.
"Ah, we were wrong. They are not moments from routing."
There was rage and stolid determination in the faces across from her, but none of that would help, not now. Shields and armor would resist the power she was about to unveil, would protect them for a time. Perhaps a handful of heartbeats, but then her voice would tear through, claw away skin and muscle, spray blood into the air. Bones would snap, skulls would shatter. They were all about to die, and nothing they did would prevent that. As here, so too the rest of the world. Glancing to her left, she saw the center advancing, now less than 30 paces distant from the motionless line of defenders. Archers were loosing arrow upon arrow, with the enemy's own archers countering here and there. Soldiers were falling, though for most shields fended off the deadly rain. 12 paces, and then the charge. Its weight will drive them back, break up that facing line, and into the gaps we will pour, splitting the formation apart. And then will come the slaughter. Returning her attention to the flank opposite her, she raised her arms, began drawing breath. The flint sword that erupted from the ground beneath the Forkrell Asael ripped into the inside of her left thigh, lifting her into the air as the tip cracked and pierced her hip bone. As its wielder rose in a shower of earth, stones, and roots, others burst from the ground surrounding the Forkrell Asael. Weapons hammered into her. Howling, writhing still on that sword, she lashed out. The back of one hand struck the forehead of Uragal the Woven, collapsing it inward, pitching the T'lani Mas from its feet. Kaltur Manal's bone mace caught the Forkrell Asael under her left arm, spun her entirely around, boots skyward and off from the skewering sword. She landed with a roar, surging back to her feet. Baroque's obsidian-tipped spear slid through her, exploding out from her lower belly. Twisting round, the Asael grasped hold of the spear shaft and lifted it into the air, taking Baroque with it. Releasing the wood, she reached up to trap Baroque's skull between her hands as she slid closer to her. With a bellow, she crushed the warrior's skull. In her mind, Sister Freedom shouted commands to her officers. Charge the enemy! Break through and encircle them! Kill every damned one of them! Leave these bone bags to me! The T'lani Mas with the crumpled forehead came towards her again. Snarling, she flung herself at him. Blistig could feel the desperate rage growing in him, and as the enemy ranks suddenly seemed to build like a rising wave and rush howling towards him, he screamed his own fury. The collision lifted soldiers from their feet, shoved them into the air. Blood misted, weapons hammered down, and the front ranks of the Malazans recoiled and then stiffened. The clamor was deafening, weapons and shrieks, and the world was crazed before the fist's eyes, frantic with motion, the flash of faces, teeth bared, sudden gushes of blood from mouths and gaping throats, bodies pushing up against his shins, staggering, flaying with his sword, buffeted by repeated blows against his shield, Blistig fought with the ferocity of a rabid dog. He was going to die. They wanted to kill him. Every damned one of them wanted to kill him, drag him down, trample his corpse. His life wasn't supposed to end like this. He would fight and fight. This was not going to be the end. He wouldn't let it.
I will not let it!
Chaos spun wild around him and the soldiers pressing against his sides. They were pushed back another step. Lostara Yil moved up alongside the adjunct, drawing her swords.
Another dance, all I can do. The dance of the world, this fucking miserable, murderous world.
She saw Ruthan Gud take Tavare's other flank, and behind her she could hear Hanar Vigolf. The fool was singing some damned Blue Rose sea shanty. Ahead, advancing now, leaning forward and striding on stiff legs like a madman, came the Forkrell Asael. His eyes were feral, and they were fixed on the adjunct. When he roared, the sound hammered them back. Blood sprayed into the air and Lostara staggered, blinded.
Whose blood? What?
And now it was pouring down her cheeks, and she saw Hanar thump down, turning to her a shredded face.
Oh, gods, it's my blood. We're all...
Impossibly, the adjunct straightened against that devastating onrush of wordless sound, drew her sword round and sought to close. The Forkrell Asael was still almost 40 paces away.
We can't do this. Even Tavare, we can't.
Ruthan Gud reached the adjunct's side in his armor of ice, but that too was riven with cracks, breaking away in a hail of shards. He seemed to be reaching for her, as if to drag her back, away from this, but no retreat was far enough. The Asael roared again. Lastara Yil's own scream was lost even to her own ears. She felt her body skidding across the broken, tortured ground.
"Against this, we are done with. Not even the adjunct. Not even Ruthengard. He slays us. Cotillion."
But not even a god could hear her prayers now. 50 paces behind, driven to his knees by the power of Akrast Korvalain, Banaskar wiped blood from his eyes. He had tried to get closer, tried to move up and join with the adjunct and her companions, but he had failed.
Failure. I know that word. Spent many a night sitting at its table.
A figure stepped past him. Badal hummed softly to herself, and that gentle sound pushed away all that the Quisitor flung at her. Ahead, she could see how the power was hurting Mother. Even with all her magic-deadening blood, her extraordinary will, Mother was being torn apart. She gave words to her wordless song, simple words, three to find the fourth, when the fourth was all that mattered.
Opals, gems, diamonds, shards. Opals, gems, diamonds, shards. You have forgotten so much, until only hunger and pain remains. I know those two things. I know them well. We have shared them, you and I. Opals, gems, diamonds, shards. Opals, gems, diamonds, shards. I sent you away once. I told you to take your hurt and your hunger away from us, because we deserved neither. Someone hurt you long ago. Someone hurt Rut long ago. Someone hurt Sadik and Held and all the others. Someone must have hurt me, too. Opals, gems, diamonds, shards. Opals, gems, diamonds, shards. I sent you away. Now I summon you. See the bringer of pain. See the deliverer of hunger, the Quisitor. I know him. I remember him. He came among my people. He told them they had to die, to answer ancient crimes. Perhaps he was right. But that did not mean he had the right. Opals, gems, diamonds, shards. Opals, gems, diamonds, shards. Do you know his kind? I think you do. Do you awaken now to ancient hurts? I think you do. I summon you. They like their justice. Now, my friend, deliver it. Opals, gems, diamonds, shards. Opals, gems, diamonds, shards.
And above the Forkral Asael, the sky darkened. Banaskar stared as the swarm of locusts descended. Where they had come from, how they had been summoned, he knew not. Their sound was a seething whisper, and then a swarming, howling cacophony. He saw the Forkral Asael cease his attack, saw the man look up. And then the swarm plunged down in an enveloping cloud, a storm of wings that suddenly blossomed crimson. Brother Aloft screamed, and as he screamed, the locusts crawled into his mouth, poured inside, mandibles slashing. Blood soaked the creatures, helped them slide down his throat. Choking, blinded and deafened, he fell to his knees. They chewed inside, his windpipe and now his stomach. They blocked his nostrils, fought to enter his ears. Their bites cut through his eyelids and burst the eyes behind them. They swarmed into the sockets. The god of the Forkral Asael was coming home. The locusts formed a seething pillar, which fell as the body it shrouded toppled to one side. Flashes of red gristle, of pink bone, and then the creatures were lifting away on their wings, rushing into the Khalansi infantry. But those soldiers, well armored, their shields up before their faces, pushed through and the locusts spun, the whir of their wings reaching a higher pitch as if giving voice to their frustration. Abruptly the swarm lifted, swirled into the air overhead. Badal could feel their need. It was without end, and she knew that if they remained in this place, she would lose control of them. They would devour everyone.
Go now, you cannot stay.
The roar reached a pitch that shivered the air, a scream of impotence, and then the whirling clouds spun away. Just beyond the bones of the Forkral Asael, the Khalansi infantry advanced, and before them stood four figures sheathed in blood.
Mother, when this is done, when you and all your children have fallen, I shall with my last breath summon them again to deliver our revenge.
War leader Gaul sat on his horse, eyes on the heavy infantry pushing past the embattled female Fokrul Asael. Their ranks were disordered, broken by the steep pitch of the hillside on their right, crowding to avoid the hill where fought their commander and the T'lani Mas. Large stones that had long ago rolled down from the summit further slowed their advance. He could see the flank of Malazans turning to ready for the inward attack, but he could also see that the intention of the enemy was to win through to the rear of the defenders. Beside him, Shalamassa said,
"War leader, the south flank!"
"We must choose one or the other," Gaul cut in. "Do you see the ones before us? They cannot hold their lines. But see how, once they are past the Malazans, they will be able to spread out, once more on level ground. They will then form up."
"War leader, the adjunct, we cannot help her," he said.
"If there were 3,000 of us, yes, we could challenge that flank. But these ones here, at the threshold of open ground, we will meet them there."
He drew his tulwar, rode out ahead of his pitifully small army, and then wheeled.
"In the name of Kul'tin and the Fall!"
He needed say nothing more. Weapons flashed, the horses tossing their heads as they caught the sudden fever of their riders. Gaul soared on his reins, pitching his mount round. The beast reared, hoofs scything in the air, and the war leader laughed. Faridan Sort had pushed her way to the edge of the flank. Once the Kalansi broke through, she would need to be there, to hold her soldiers, to maintain their resolve.
"But they do not need me. See their faces. The enemy seeks our underbelly and will be met with iron. And I will be there. This battle shall be mine to the end."
And then she heard the sound of horses' hoofs, looked up, twisted round, and saw the Kundril burned tears at full charge. Even as the first of the Kalansi spilled out from the narrow passage, the horse warriors, with Gaul in the lead, crashed into them. The impact shook the ground, rippled through bodies all the way to the Malazan ranks.
"Hold fast!" Faridan Sort shouted. "Now push! Into the enemy! Push!"
The Kalansi advance had been checked, but not for long, she knew.
"It has to be enough. Now let's make them pay for that bad footing."
The north-facing side of the Malazan phalanx surged forward, Faridan Sort in their midst, and the Kalansi heavy infantry turned to meet them. But they were staggering, stones rolling underfoot, boulders trapping their legs, and the Kundril were in a frenzy, driving ever deeper into their ranks.
"Gods, see them fight!"
Sergeant Ordinary Grey grasped hold of the corporal's jerkin, pulled him close.
"Great Fan, where's your squad?"
The Falari's eyes were wild, his face bright red.
"All around us, you cartoony spider bait!"
"Where's your sergeant?"
"Dead! Where's your fucking squad?"
"With your sergeant," snapped Ordinary Grey. "Except for my Semk here."
They were being jostled, ever losing ground. Grid Fan's eyes shifted past the sergeant and then widened.
"Someone sewed up his fucking mouth! He likes it that way. Now listen, the south flank. We ain't got a south flank. She's over there. Her and that shadow dancer and that captain with piss ice in his beard. The assail's finished, but the heavy infantry's about to fold us up. She named you, Fan, just like she named me in Could Howl. You understanding me?"
Grid Fan shifted round.
"Hair Ravage, Shample! Find the others! We're pulling out of this press!"
The squad's huge mailed fist turned to the corporal.
"I barely got a swing in! Been waiting for fucking ever, corporal!" "We'll get you your hood-damned fight, you cannies, squid-eater! We're taking on a whole army of heavies!"
"How many of us?"
Sample demanded, her blue-tinted skin ashen with dust. Fan turned back to Ordinary Grey, who answered,
"Maybe 10.
The Napan's grin flashed white, and in a sharp, piercing voice she cried out,
"Shades, Brutan, Asp, Shipwreck, and Gillslime! With us! Move, damn you all!"
Paws sagged beside Kindly, who risked a moment to glower down at the man.
Get out of here! You're a damned liability!
Just need to catch my breath!
Beyond Paws, in the seething press, Kindly saw a dozen or so soldiers moving through the ranks away from the front line.
What in Hood's name are they doing?
But he saw no panic in the faces of the soldiers closest to them. Words were shouted back and forth, and the ranks shifted to make room for them to pass. Paws straightened once more, followed Kindly's glare.
Ordinary Grey, Fan and Sample. And there's that scary Semk. It's the ones she called on, sir.
Is it now?
Another hard shove from the front staggered them back again.
Head back to the camp, Paws. Do something useful. Protect the children.
I don't think...
Oh, right, sir. I'm moving up again. Get out of here.
Sir?
That's it. You're up on report, soldier. Now go before I kill you myself.
Lesser-watered Trissin moved past the bones of Brother aloft. She struggled to not look down, yet could not help herself. Locusts still crawled here and there, out from under the bones or the slack skins of intestines, still crowded the gaping jaws. She could feel Sister Freedom's fury and pain as the wounded pure lashed out. The Tlanimas would not win that battle. But they were taking all the Forkrell Asael's concentration. In truth, it was high-watered Melest who was commanding the assault from the center. She saw, ahead of them, a line of four soldiers, and her eyes widened.
This is all they have for us? They are mad!
Off to the right, spilling out from the enemy phalanx, came a dozen or so medium infantry. A laugh burst from her.
This is what they offer in opposition?
She gestured, her mind snapping out the command to spread out, widen the facing line. They would sweep past these fools and then wheel round to close on the flank from behind. The battle was as good as done.
Adjunct, said Ruthengard, we need to fall back into the phalanx. We can't stay out here. We can't hold that advance.
But Tavare Paran seemed to be beyond words. Blood flowed down her face, as if all that she had contained, all that she had held inside, was now pushing free.
Gods below. Take her left, Lostara, with Hanar on yours. I've got the right. Adjunct, fuck this waiting. Let's charge.
Her head snapped round, the eyes raw and wild, and then the four of them were moving forward. Trissin shouted in shock. They were attacking. And now she saw one of the soldiers was sheathed in ice, even unto the longsword in his hand. And another was coming forward with the fluid grace of water, two swords seeming to flow from her hands. Apart from the ice-bound figure, the others were covered in blood. These were the ones who had stood against Brother aloft.
That woman, she commands this army. What is she doing? What are they all doing?
Grid Fan swore in a stream of languages and then yelled,
Run, you fools! Catch up to 'em!
And as they pelted forward, 10 regulars racing to join up with their adjunct and her officers, the corporal found breath to bark out orders.
Herr Ravage, go far end and arrive hard. Sample, follow him up. Shades Elar and Brutenhab, back up the Shadow Dancer and the Blue Rose. Shipwreck and Kudhowl, stay with me for the adjunct. You too, Grey.
Sergeant Ordinary Grey cursed.
I outrank you, Fan.
Sure what?
Right, the man gasped. You all, what Fan said. Carry on, Corporal.
Asp Slither, got any magic? How about you, Gil?
It's coming back,
hissed Gil Slime. And Asp Slither cackled like a strangled swan.
Just watch me,
she crowed.
No,
Fan shouted. They were only a dozen or so paces away now.
Hold back, both of you! Find their fucking commander and hit the fucker with all you fucking got! You fucking got it?
The Cartooly mage cackled a second time and loomed close.
No, sir! What do you mean?
A strange burbling sound spat out from Kudhal. Fan shot the Semk a look.
That's some laugh you got there.
They arrived like a whirlwind into the front line of the Colansi. Swords were a blur in the hands of the dancer, and where they touched, blood sang forth and bodies tumbled back. The ice-clad soldier waded in, blows bouncing from him unnoticed, and cut deep into the ranks, his sword seemingly everywhere. The tall soldier on the dancer's left was bellowing as he beat down the Colansi in front of him, shield slamming another and knocking the two men off their feet, where they fouled those coming up behind them. And the commander fought with breathtaking precision, every motion either evading a thrust or dealing death, on her face an expression that struck ice through Trissin's heart. And then the other soldiers arrived, four coming up around the commander, three of them howling like demons, the fourth with his mouth horribly sewn tight. They struck in a manic frenzy, driving the Colansi back. She saw a huge soldier collide with the heavies who had swung round the icebound man, somehow knocking three of them to the ground. His short sword lashed down, seemingly little more than touching each Colansi on the side of the neck, and from three throats blood sprayed out.
"Surround them!"
screamed Trissin from three ranks behind the fighting.
"Cut them!"
A ball of flames engulfed the Colansi commander, raging wild, and from the cloudless sky above, lightning crashed down, the impact thundering, flinging soldiers to the ground, the strike creating a vast hole in the ranks. Burnt flesh and parts of bodies rained down. Three demons clawed up from the ground beneath the burning woman, their bodies covered in protruding mouths filled with dagger-length fangs, the talons on the ends of their fingers long as sabers, their heads swarming with coal-red eyes. Roaring, they lunged into the raging flames, tearing the commander to pieces. Seeing all this, Grid Fan shot a wild look back at his mages, saw them convulsed with laughter.
"Fucking illusionists! Tone it down, you fools! You want to give it all away?"
Gil Slime and Asp Slither looked up, suddenly straight-faced.
"Got anything else?"
Fan demanded. Both shook their heads.
"Then get up here and fight!"
The Colansi had recovered, were now pushing to close once again, and more were swinging round on the far side, forcing Sample and Hair Ravage to back up. Swearing, Fan worked up close to the adjunct.
"Sir, we need to fall back into the phalanx! Adjunct!"
When she did not reply, or even seem to hear him, he cursed and said to the sergeant beside him,
"Grey, listen. We come up and around her, either side. We make us a wall so she can't get past us. Shipwreck, go there. And you, Semk, right here. We're going to force her back and into the ranks, understood?"
"It's the battle lust, sir,"
shouted Shipwreck, staggering drunkenly, as was his way in moments of high excitement, when his damaged inner ear started acting up.
"I know what the fuck it is, idiot. Now let's do this."
Lastara Yil was being pulled away from the adjunct's flank. Pennar Vigolf was hard-pressed, now defending himself from attackers on two sides. The sudden arrival of the regulars had eased the threat, but only momentarily. There were simply too many of the bastards. Sobbing, bearing countless wounds, Lastara Yil drew closer to her love.
"Don't die. Please, don't die."
A sword blade clipped Hennar's head. He staggered, stunned. Lastara screamed, now fighting blind to the threats pressing in around her, her gaze fixed on Hennar. The two regulars collapsed in to fend off the blows rushing down towards Hennar. A woman and a man, the former Nathi, the latter Seven Cities. She had never seen them before, but they fought the attackers to a standstill above her love, who dragged off his cracked helm, blood gushing down from a scalp wound, and was trying to regain his feet. Lastara hacked down a Colansi on her left, leapt over his crumpling form. The grace was gone now, only brutal savagery remained. She opened another man's throat. The Nathi woman shrieked, a sword driven through her chest. Dropping her weapon, she took hold of the arm gripping that sword and pulled her attacker down as she fell. Her companion's short sword licked out, cut through half his neck. The man was shouting, trying to drag Hennar back to his feet, until an axe crushed the back of the regular's head, through helm and bone, and flung him forward, limbs flopping. But Hennar was on his feet once more, and Lastara reached his side. Just beyond, a row of faces. Malazan regulars shouting from their line on the flank, screaming and beckoning, "Close! Hurry! Come to us!" Lastara spun round, blades whipping out.
"Henar! To the ranks! Go!"
She saw the other regulars spilling back, all of them arrayed protectively round the adjunct as they forced her towards the ranks. Ruthen Gard and one huge regular were fighting to prevent the group from getting cut off, enveloped, but even they were being pushed back.
"Take me, Cotillion, please, I beg you, take me."
But from her patron god, nothing. She twisted to her left, marched ahead to hold the enemy. A dozen Colansi rushed her. The Cundrill had pushed as deep as they could into the press of heavy infantry. They had gone farther than Warleader Gaul had thought possible. But now the horses were all dead, and so too the last of his warriors. But the advance had been blocked. Bodies alone were enough to prevent the enemy from swinging round the Malazan wing. So now they were simply pushing inward, forcing the regulars into an ever-contracting formation. A sword had ripped open everything below his ribcage. He was lying on his back, on the corpses of strangers and kin, his intestines spilled out and tangled round his legs. Something was pulsing in the air. He could not be certain if it came from outside or from somewhere deep inside him.
"No, outside."
Voices rising in rhythm, but he could not quite make out the word. Again and again, the sound rising and falling, coming from somewhere off to his right. He found the pounding of his heart falling into that pulse, and warmth flowed through him, though he knew not the reason for it. Darkness was drawing close.
That sound, voices. They are voices, rising from the Malazans. What are they saying? What do they shout again and again?
Abruptly, thick blood crackled in one ear, opened a way through, and he could at last hear the endlessly repeated cry.
"Cundrill! Cundrill! Cundrill!"
A word for his fading heart, a song for his ending life.
"Coltane, I shall stand before you. We shall ride with your Wiccans. I see crows over the ancestral hills."